There's a Henderson Ecclesia for, you know, hosting this and putting all this work and effort, putting on such a Bible school as this is a lot of time, effort, a labor of love. Really appreciate it. This is something that's always been important to come to for our family. And we just thank y'all for continuing to do this and giving us the opportunity to be here. So this week, you know, I thought, given the dramatic events that have been spanning the past 2 years, I thought this week we could focus on the past, the present, and the future of Jerusalem and Israel as kind of a guide to our faith. And we're going to do this kind of thematically. Each section, I've kind of selected a theme verse to kind of give us a little topic for the day. And what we'll do is we'll cover a little bit about the development of Jerusalem, the selection of Jerusalem, its ancient history. We'll cover the destruction of AD 70 and the Olivet Prophecy. That'll probably take a couple days. Thursday, we'll move into more post-biblical history and modern current events. As you would assume, I've been having to revise that frequently since I first put that down. Generally check the news every morning to see what I'm going to have to change on my slides to keep us current. And then Friday, we'll talk about the future and some prophecy. So, and I also give this disclosure. Today, some of my slides are text heavy. And tomorrow I'll have, when we get to more text heavy sections, I'll bring some printouts to pass around to maybe help folks who like to take notes. Alternatively, if you want PDF versions of this, feel free to ask me. I can email it to you. As long as you promise not to start raising questions about later in the week or starting to give me grief about what's going to happen on Friday before we get there. Or alternatively, you don't want to ask me, Mary Jane and Alex have got copies in their email too, so they can forward them. All right. So with our first class, our ultimate goal is to really answer the question, why Jerusalem? You know, as our key verse states for today, right, God has chosen Jerusalem. Now this comes out of 2 Chronicles. And this, of course, is not an isolated sentiment in the scriptures. Zechariah quotes that God has chosen Jerusalem. Psalm 132, there's a passage that we'll get back to today, but it says in verse 13, "For the Lord hath chosen Zion, he has desired it for his habitation." Isaiah, which we heard about earlier, he says in chapter 52, he says, "Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city." Holy means separated, set apart. Nehemiah calls Jerusalem the holy city as well. You know, this is a principle that's well attested to in Scripture, but why did God choose Jerusalem? So to get at that answer today, we're going to kind of ground our class in a common picture, if I can, or maybe a vision of Jerusalem. We're going to trace its development, looking at history, geography, and even some of the names associated with it. So I don't know what you picture when you think about Jerusalem in your own mind. Maybe it's the Temple Mount with the massive golden dome of the rock. That's an easily recognizable skyline up there. Maybe you think of the Western Wall, which is also up there in picture. Or maybe you think of this ancient walled city with all these walls going around it. That, however, or at least is modern Jerusalem, or at least reasonably modern Jerusalem. The Jerusalem of the Bible looked a little different, and we can see that, I think, best through maps. So this is the outline of the old city of Jerusalem that you would get in any kind of touristy map, that if you were to go to Jerusalem, this is what they would hand you to kind of with the major sites, and this is what Jerusalem looks like. You can see the Temple Mount clearly outlined there on stage right for y'all, or is that actually stage left? Did I say that backwards? Okay. On your right. And that kind of helps orientate yourself to where we're at. And then you have the walls outlined on the around. And to the right of the Temple Mount that's not on the mount, map would be the Mount of Olives. And this, however, what you see here is a very significant geographical shift from the past. We'll get into this in a little bit more detail later, but you can see the city has slowly been shifting northwards over time. The thin black lines are the current walls that were in that old map or that you could walk around today. Those walls that people walk around, the ancient city walls of Jerusalem, are actually from the 1500s. The city that Herod built, the city that Jesus visited and was crucified in, is slightly to the south, but more of the modern city. That's the bigger area there listed under the title of Herod, right? Those are the blue lines. Hezekiah's Jerusalem was even more southern, as you can see in that set of blue lines. And then David and Solomon even had less of an area, and that was very much further south and to the east. And the city of Jerusalem has historically been a very small place. As I said, we'll return to Matthew's letter, but this kind of helps start us to understand some of the events and context we'll look at in a bit. So when you think about the Old Testament Jerusalem, you're really thinking about a very small sliver of land sitting in the Judean hills. So the first appearance of Jerusalem occurs in Genesis and is associated with the life of Abraham. Now, just as a note, I'm going to be talking about a lot of some very old events and old dates where some of these dates are either uncertain or highly disputed. So take for example, the events precipitating Abraham's encounter with Melchizedek, the so-called War of the Kings. I'll try to give you some idea of where I get dates, but just be warned that, you know, some of the references you will go look up in online or other books may be differing by 100 years or so, right? Like, these are very old. And ones that have a wide variation are even those that credit the authenticity of Scripture. I'm just not going to really deal a lot with more of the skeptical sources, just as a disclaimer. So let's look at this first reference to Jerusalem. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 14. Genesis 14, I'm going to read verses 1 through 3. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chalamader, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war with Bera, king of Salem, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Sinab, king of Adam, and Shamber, king of Zebulun, and the king of Bela, which is in Zorah. All these were joined together in the Vale of Siddim, which is in the Salt Sea. Now let's skip down to 10 to 13. And the Vale of Siddim was full of slime pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there, and they that remained fled into the mountain. And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, his goods, and departed. Then came one that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Anar, and these were confederate with Abram. So this, of course, is a very famous event in Abraham's life. Him delivering Lot from which is in effect. He is in effect in the middle of a world war, right? This is an international conflict that he gets caught up in. Now, when Abraham hears of Lot's capture, he's in the plain of Mamre, which according to the previous chapter in Genesis is near Hebron, which is down here. I don't know if y'all can see me. It's way down there by the Salt Sea, right? So he's living down there in the south. So he heads north to intercept the returning armies on their way back. He defeats them and he rescues Lot. Okay? He intercepts them way up there. On his path back to Hebron, he encounters the king of Sodom, which interaction we're going to ignore. And he encounters Melchizedek, king of Salem. So let's continue on in Genesis 14. Again, this is a well-known account. Genesis 14, 17 to 20. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chelomner, the king of, and the kings of him that were with him, and the valley of Sheba, which is in the king's dale. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him, and he said, blessed be Abram, the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And he blessed the Most High God, which delivered thine enemies into thy hand, and he gave him tithes of all. So we have two pieces of information here. The most obvious is the name of Salem. From Psalm 72, or 76, verse 2, we know that Salem is equated with Jerusalem. These are the same names. That psalm reads, in Judah is God known, his name is great in Israel, in Salem also is his tabernacle, and his dwelling place in Zion. We'll get to Zion as a name for Jerusalem in a bit, but rest assured, it's also going to be a synonym. So we have Salem as equivalent to Zion, which is equivalent to Jerusalem, and we know that Salem is in Judah. Okay. We also have this meeting that was in the Valley of Sheba, which is the King's Dale, as the King James said it. The Dale is just, that word Dale is just the King James Version's English, and translators being particularly difficult because Dale means valley. So while the Sheba Valley is not mentioned again, the Valley of the Kings actually is. The King's Dale, the Valley of Kings is. In 2 Samuel 18:18, we have this little piece of information. 2 Samuel 18:18. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and reared himself up a pillar, which is in the King's Dale, or again, King's Valley. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name and called it unto this day Absalom's place. So Absalom likely would have put his monument near Jerusalem as well, right? Like that would have made sense for him to be doing that. So we have this kind of location. So we'll take a couple of things away from this. First, Jerusalem is not a Jewish city. Abraham does not reside in Jerusalem. Nor does it seem that he even from this account enters it, right? He's met on the way back outside of the city in these valleys. Next, we have the figure of Melchizedek as a priest and king of God ruling in Jerusalem. A type of Christ, to be sure, and a figure that is key to our understanding of Christ's priesthood. So we have all of those elements. However, none of that still tells us why God chose Jerusalem, right? Specifically, part of our understanding of Melchizedek's significance is only informed later because we've learned that Jerusalem is so significant hundreds of years later, right? We only see the significance of the city Salem after Jerusalem gets chosen. So we have this important event that describes an interaction with Jerusalem, but that doesn't really tell us still why Jerusalem was chosen by God. For the next mention of Jerusalem, let's look at Genesis 22. And this is going to be the sacrifice of Isaac. And just to be clear, this is not an explicit mention of Jerusalem, but one of the mountains that's associated with it. And this would have been probably, by most people's guess, about 30 years after the events of the Battle of the Kings. So turn to Genesis 22, 1 and 2. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt or test Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, behold, here I am. And he said, take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. We're not going to read all of this because we know the account so well, but the commandment here is to go to the land of Moriah. Skip to verse 14, because we learn it is not actually until God stays Abraham's hand do we learn that Abraham and Isaac were actually on a mountain. Verse 14 says, and Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said, in this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. That phrase, in the mount of the Lord, it shall be seen, is better rendered, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. That's the New American Standard Version, or the Jewish Study Bible renders it, on the mountain of the Lord there is vision. So, as in the case of Melchizedek, again, we have to kind of skip forward to see the significance and to create the connection of this event to Jerusalem. Keep your hand in Genesis, because we'll come back. But turn to 2 Chronicles, chapter 3. Second Chronicles chapter 3, verse 1. Then Solomon began to build the house of the Lord at Jerusalem in Mount Moriah, where the Lord appeared unto David his father, in the place that David had prepared on the threshing floor for Ornan, the Jebusite. Now we'll get to David and Solomon soon enough, but here we have a second connection to the area that will be Jerusalem. In Chronicles, Chronicles definitely ties these two locations together. And we'll see in a bit later that we're going to note that David is also going to have a vision on this spot, just like Abraham had a vision on this spot, and as he named this location. So, I think this is worth noting. This is an artist's rendering of what the kind of area would have looked the time of Israel. I think it's worth noting, when Abraham goes to sacrifice Isaac, he's not going into the total wilderness, right? There is a town nearby where he is going to go have to do this. And not only is there a town, there's a town that he's been around before, right? There are people nearby that are going to see what he's doing. There's going to be a set of people there nearby that he's already come into contact with and had interaction with. So, you know, we look around and think about Abraham's trials. And it was public. We can think about it just being public because he had other servants with him, right? He had Isaac and other servants. But I think this makes it even more stark, his confidence and his understanding, because he's doing something very open that a lot of people are going to be able to see. This isn't a private trial. Now, interestingly enough, that ends the biblical account of Jerusalem until the period of Judges. After those two discussions, we don't hear about Jerusalem again until the period of the Judges. Now, we actually do have a little bit about the city from historical sources. And here we have what are called the Amarna tablets. These tablets were diplomatic correspondence between the Egyptian administrators and kings and their representatives in the Middle East. So these tablets come from the 14th century and are named after the city of Egypt in which they were found. Some of the letters are from kings of territories that Pharaoh definitely saw as equal in terms. They're back and forth, and you know, they're equals in terms of power and prestige. He's having, you know, interactions with peers that way. But the ones from the city-states that he has in his collection are very different. It shows that the Egyptians were very influential in the area, and all of these cities were largely tributaries to the Egyptians. And in this cache of letters they found, several of them were actually from Jerusalem. I have the text up here. Here, in this one here, the king of Jerusalem is a man named Ahibedad, and he's requesting help from incursions and attacks. Let's read this here if I can. It says, "Speak to the king, my lord, thus, Abihiba, your servant, at the feet of my lord the king, seven times and seven times have I fallen. Look, as for me, neither my father nor my mother put me in this place. The strong arm of the king installed me in the house of my father. May the king turn his attention to the regular troops, so that the regular troops of the king, my lord, may come forth. The king has no lands. The Apiru men have plundered the lands of the king. If there are regular troops in the area, there will still be lands of the king, my lord. But if there are no regular troops, the land of the king, my lord, are lost." And first, you can see right off the bat, he is a vassal king, right? He's prostrating himself in his text right before the king, and he says he is wholly dependent on Egypt. He didn't get to be king because of his mom and dad. He got to be king because Pharaoh said, you get to be king. So that's kind of interesting. And at a minimum, this kind of sets independently outside of the scriptures the establishment of Jerusalem, that it existed before we read about it in the period of Judges, and it was around, right? That's interesting. But what's more interesting is this word appearing. Now, with all things ancient and dealing with the Bible and dealing with languages that nobody talks about anymore, there's a lot of controversy. But here we see in this letter that there's a people called the Epiru that have been attacking the land. Some scholars are adamant that Epiru is the same as Hebrew, that this is the transliteration of the local dialect into describing the Hebrews. And that would be a pretty amazing confirmation of the activity of Joshua, right? Because this is the time period it's coming around. We have a king writing from Jerusalem to his Pharaoh lord saying, hey, there's a bunch of people running around called Epiru, and they are taking over everything. Unless you send us troops, you're going to lose it all. There are other scholars who are just as adamant that Epiru does not mean Hebrew. But regardless, at this time, Jerusalem still exists as a Canaanitish city moving around. So now we're going to go through some a little additional history just for completeness sake. We still haven't, you may have by now forgotten my initial question of why did God choose Jerusalem, because we haven't answered it, but we still haven't answered it yet. I promise you we'll get to it. Additional history. In Joshua, we actually have the first appearance of the name Jerusalem. In the Amarna letters previously, the city was called Jerusalem. And in fact, in the name Jerusalem does not appear in the Torah or the law portion of the Old Testament at all, right? That word doesn't exist. We'll come back to that in a point. But as a reminder, we are still interested why Jerusalem was chosen. The book of Joshua closes with... that's doing more than I expected to. The book of Joshua closes, I think we know, with the Jebusites still inhabiting Jerusalem, right? That the Jews were not able to drive them out to start with. So Jerusalem ends up being both a site of battles and challenges during the period of the Judges. Look at Judges chapter 1, verse 8. It starts here in Judges 1, and it says, now the children of Judah had fought against Jerusalem and had taken it, and smitten it with the edge of the sword, and set the city on fire. Now skip down to verse 21. And the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites that inhabited Jerusalem, but the Jebusites dwell with the children of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. So here we have some kind of challenges with the city of Jerusalem. In Judges, it says it's destroyed, but then it also turns around and says it's still existing. Josephus is going to help kind of clarify this issue. He states the following. He says this. They besieged Jerusalem, and when they had taken the lower city, which was not under a considerable time, they slew all the inhabitants, but the upper city was not to be taken without great difficulty, through the strength of the walls, the nature of the palace. So Jerusalem is a difficult place to attack. I'll step up here for a second if I can do this, right? So, let's hope I don't go crazy with the sound. Right, so we have Jerusalem sitting surrounded by valleys on a mountain, very high walls. The city is actually bifurcated in the middle by yet another wall. And so Josephus says that Israelites were able to get through the bottom part of the city and do destruction, but they were never able to actually get all the way through and destroy the main part of the city. And we'll actually see that David puts his palace up at the higher end of the city because that seems to be the more secure part. And looking at this map, you can really see how secure the city was, how difficult it would have been to get to it. Valleys on all sides, and even a dip between Mount Moriah to the north and the bottom of the city, the bottom. And notably, in Judges, Jerusalem is called Jebus on account of the Jebusites, and they actually act as a foil or contrast to what, personally, I've always found to be one of the most difficult accounts in Judges, the accounts of the Levite and his concubine. Right? Jerusalem was the place that was suggested by the Levite servant for stopping the night. The Levite said, hey, we should actually go into this city. The Levite opts for a Jewish city instead, that's Ramah. And he thinks because going to a Canaanite city would be worse than his own people. And we know how that account turns out, of course. So that's Jerusalem and Judges. So that brings us up to probably the man most associated with Jerusalem, David. So David conquers Jerusalem from the Jebusites. Let's look at this account in 2 Samuel. We're just going to not read all of it, but we'll just do 2 Samuel, that's chapter 5, 6 through 9. And the king and his men, that's David, went to Jerusalem unto the Jebusites and the inhabitants of the land, which spake unto David, saying, except thou take away the blind and the lame, thou shalt not come hither, thinking David could not come hither. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, the same as the city of David. And David said on that day, whosoever getteth up to the gutter and smiteth the Jebusites and the lame and the blind that are hated of David's soul, shall be the chief of the captain. And they said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house. So David dwelt in the fort and called the city David, and David built round about from Milo inward. From the Chronicles account, we know that it's actually Joab who's the one who breaks through the city. Now, in the King James Version, it has that word, if they can get up to the gutter. That word gutter's got a lot of attention from historians. It means water, conduit, or pipe. And a long-standing theory has been that Joab gained access to the city through the water system, that portions of it, which Brother David actually mentioned today. The map showed here, the bottom and then the top is the fortification. The Gihon Spring, which actually feeds the water to the city, is outside the city walls and sits in the Kidron Valley. So that's the image below, and they, to protect it and give it some sort of fortification, the Jebusites built around that little portion outside the wall to give the city access to water to the spring. And you can kind of see what some individuals think that fortification would have looked like around the spring area. So when David takes the city, he's going to actually take this fortification and he's going to expand upon it. But there's a lot of debate about what gutter means here. Some people think that Joab got access underneath the spring and crawled up through. If you saw Brother David's image of Hezekiah's tunnel, it had a thing called Warren Shaft. For a long time, people thought that that was possibly the way that Joab got through. Alternatively, the NIV marginal reference suggests the word grappling hook instead of gutter. That strikes me as a very strange translation. But there may be a way that Joab just actually managed to scale the walls and get through to the water system in that way. Regardless, they get to the city via its water supply area. And we also read here in this passage that was also important that we get the first mention of Zion. And we get clearly again that it's synonymous with the city of David, which is Jerusalem. All right. So what I can tell from what I can read, this map is fairly largely accurate. Mount Zion will start here on this one. Again, if you want PDFs of these maps, I think they're useful. Just let me know. Also, this is Mount Zion.
Zion's its own mountain right here. It's this little one right here. Mount Moriah is going to be separated up there to the top.
Mount Zion is this little one at the bottom. Lots of maps will actually say Mount Zion is to the west of that area. That's really not accurate. That's because the Roman Christian pilgrims who showed up to Jerusalem by the time it looked very different called the west area Zion. That was really after the city had been dramatically altered. So they were just kind of making a mistake there, but that historical name has just come down to us. This middle valley was called the Trophim Valley. Here, over time, is going to get filled in. That's how the city's going to grow. They're going to start filling in that area to make the area level to start going forward. And eventually, that western area to the west of Zion is actually going to be higher than Mount Zion itself. David's city is Zion, and it belongs very much to the south. On the right, we have an artist's conception of what Jerusalem looked like at this time. Again, you can see it is not a very big city. This is a small area. I would also note that you can see here at this top is probably what people think is David's palace, way up here at the high point of the city. Again, it was probably the most secure location, but you can also see probably from such a spot up there, it was probably very easy for him to see across rooftops and to individuals like Bathsheba. So I like this graphic as well, because I think you see the city on Mount Zion. The western hill is named very accurately. You have the valley sitting around it. And you can see how David strengthened the city, that he's going to start building walls further and further out to let the city grow over time. All right. We'll note that at this point that the city of David is solely on Zion. We do not have any mention of Mount Moriah yet. So this is going to return to our modern city image here. And again, when I think about what Jerusalem looks like, most of us kind of start focusing on the Temple Mount. But the city of Zion is just barely on this image, right? I was really glad to see Brother David talk about where he found the Hezekiah stuff, because he's finding it more where Zion would have been. He's finding stuff down here to the south, right? Like, this is where the historical city would have been. This is what ancient Jerusalem would have been. For those of you who have been to Jerusalem and gone through Hezekiah's tunnel or gone down to the city of David Park, you know this is where you went to go do all that stuff. So this is where the ancient city was at. It has moved this direction over time. Yeah, I know we still haven't talked about why yet. We'll get there. So, the initial integration of Mount Moriah occurs with the account of David's census of the people. Turn to 2 Samuel 24. And we're just touching on these a bit. Laser.
Red point.
Sweet.
Red
All right. Always good to have a teacher in the audience. Have laser travel, laser pointer will travel, right? All right. So I lost my train of thought though because I was trying to be funny. Second Samuel. What did I say? 2 Samuel 24. Thank you, Kelly. That's not a good sign when I have to ask you all for what I'm thinking about. 2 Samuel 24. We're just going to skim this account because, again, we know it. Verse 1. And this is when David numbers the people, right? Verse 1, and the anger of the Lord, and again the anger of the Lord was kindled against David, and he moved David against them to say, go and number Israel and Judah, right? David numbers the people. The prophet Gad offers him three options for punishment. David chooses the pestilence to come down. We know this account. That brings us down to verses 15 and 16. So the Lord sent a pestilence upon the land, upon Israel from the morning, evening to the time of hunger, and there died of the people from Dan, even to Beersheba, 70,000 men. And the When the angel stretched forth his hand upon Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord repented of the evil and said to the angel that destroyed the people, "It is enough, stay now thy hand." And the angel of the Lord was in the threshing place of Araunah, the Jebusite. So, the parallel account is in 1 Chronicles chapter 21. I'm just going to read one verse out of that. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 16. And David lifted up his eyes and saw the angel of the Lord stand between the earth and heaven, having drawn sword and the hand stretched out over Jerusalem. Then David and the elders of Israel who were clothed in sackcloth fell upon their faces. And we have this, you know, that's kind of set up here. We have this very dramatic scene, right? And this very dramatic scene. David is here. David is here on his palace, right? Like, here's the vision, right? He's in his palace. He's there up on his palace looking over everything. And he looks across this little dip between Mount Zion and Mount Moriah. And he sees the angel of death coming straight for Jerusalem, right? That's effectively what he sees, this angel bringing this pestilence. The Lord repents and ends the pestilence from striking Jerusalem. Just one more part. We know then afterwards, afterwards it ends with this part. Verse 18. And then Gad came to David and said, "Go rear up an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite." So David goes up and buys the threshing floor for an altar space, right? We can also just kind of get a coda to this account in 2 Chronicles in the life of Solomon. In 2 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 1, we have one more little part here. Then Solomon began to build a house of the Lord at Jerusalem in Mount Moriah, where the Lord appeared unto David his father in the place that David had prepared on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. So Solomon is going to build his temple up here and extend the city that way. So that's going to be kind of the end of history, and it ties it all back together. We get Mount Moriah there, we get the place of vision, we have where David saw a vision, where Abraham saw a vision, we get all this connection. That's kind of our end of our history of geography review for right now. So, we come up to the point of David and Solomon, and what do we end up with? We have Jerusalem becomes a Jewish city. It is the city of David, right? It is the capital of the nation. We have inclusion of both Mount of Zion, right? Which is down here. We get Mount Zion down here in the city of Jerusalem. And we have Mount Moriah, which is up here where the temple's at, right? So Jerusalem now has all of the key characteristics that fit with our kind of theme verse today. Again, it was, "I have chosen Jerusalem that my name might be there, and I have chosen David to be over my people Israel." King in Zion, temple of the Lord there, there's where his name's at, it's ruling Israel. Okay. Still, why? Why this city? Well, I'll try to give... I've been saying this all the time. We'll get there. I don't have a great answer. I'll give it my best thought, though. Okay? Yep. So turn to Deuteronomy chapter 12 with me, if you would. Deuteronomy 12. Verse 11 reads the following. "Then shall there be a place which the Lord your God shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. Thither you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes, your heath offerings of your land, and all your choice vows which you vow unto the Lord. And the key verse, the key point of that, I think, there is the place that the Lord shall choose. Now, this verse, of course, is talking about the temple, right? That's where it's talking about the location of the temple, what's going to happen. But Jerusalem is the city that includes the temple. So I think this is talking about Jerusalem indirectly. From this, I think what we can take, the selection of Jerusalem, the fact that God said, I will choose this place, I think it illustrates the principle of election to us. I also think it illustrates the concept that God does not rely on man to accomplish his will. You know, I mentioned this, and I think of this for a couple reasons. First, as I mentioned earlier, Jerusalem is not actually mentioned in the Torah, right? It's not in the Old Testament law. Salem is there, but we're only later able to equate Salem with Jerusalem after it becomes really Jerusalem as we know it. So when God states to the Israelites that he will choose a place, he does not reveal that location to them. He's not telling them what that location is. Now remember, this is important, that the nation of Israel and no tribe could state that they directed the selection of the temple at Jerusalem. Abraham did not choose Mount Moriah when he was directed to it. It was God's choice. No tribe conquered Jerusalem. No tribe had any historical or physical connection to the place. Not even David, who conquers Jerusalem, not even David, who conquers Jerusalem, says he chooses the site, right? Remember, it's the prophet Gad who tells to David, he relays God's instruction about the place of the altar, right? So even David doesn't get to choose the location. Even further, the site, Mount Moriah, wasn't even owned by the nation. It had to be purchased from a Jebusite. Every step, or every aspect, or every point of significance of this place was always God's choice. It was always his choice, always his direction, always his action that led to it. So because of God's actions, no member of the city of Jerusalem or king could claim that they had earned God's favor. Right? And that's a critical lesson. We have been blessed to put on the saving name of Jesus Christ. We have been redeemed. We have been purchased. We have been saved from a certain perishing death. And we are promised to stand in front of our judge. But we didn't earn any of that. We did not do anything to deserve God's good favor. But as recipients of that favor, and now standing in newness of life, right? Now that we begin, we're obligated to be good and productive servants. But that gift of that opportunity, we didn't earn. You know, likewise, God says this through Jeremiah. This is Jeremiah 27:5, but I'm going to read it out of the English Standard Version. He says, I have made the earth, the man and the beast that are upon the ground, by my great power and by my outstretched arm, and I give it to whomever it seems right to me. God's plan of salvation does not rely on us. His will be accomplished regardless. So I think we're almost at time. 6 whole minutes. Well, so a little story. So several years ago at Kentucky, Brother Jim was talking. He was giving a lecture, or he gave the class, and I came after Brother Jim. Brother Jim ended his class and said, we got some time. Are there any questions? And I thought to myself, that's a nice idea. I'll do that. After I did that, my mother admitted to me that I scared her to death when I said, open it up for questions, comments, thoughts, other ideas.
I did mention to you that David bought that piece of ground in the mountain.
Yes, he did.
His next of kin that has the right of redemption is Jesus Christ.
That's point, right? That is Jesus' inheritance, right? That is the inheritance of the king. That is his domain to take. That is a good point, right? We have that in. That is the great city of the king. Tim.
Do we know at what point, or why they changed it from Jebus to Jerusalem, and why, of all things, the city of Eve, who actually changed the name, and why would they have changed it then? We don't.
That's a great question. I don't. I don't know if anybody else knows anything on the changing of the names over the time. I would assume it has to do with the dominance of whoever was in charge, right? I would assume the arrogance and lack of humility of man of being able to name stuff over ourselves. But you are correct, right? We went from this beautiful city of peace with Melchizedek to the city of genocides, right?
Just an interesting point about warning. If you really study the Hebrew in 2 Samuel 24, he's a man with four different names. In 2 Samuel 24, each time we see the Authorized Version, Moana, those three times, each time it's spelled differently in Hebrew with a different meaning. Interesting little study there, he said.
Everybody heard their homework, right? Everybody got that. Alright, well I got through that unscathed. So tomorrow, we'll end there. Next time what we're going to pick up is this verse. Our verse will be Matthew 24:3. And he said upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us what shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming in the end of the world. I think that'll probably take us a couple of days. So thank you all for the attention, and we'll pick up tomorrow. Thank you.